This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Daily Digest. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, together with Sumitra Selvaraj and Lim Soo Ann. And now on to our second story, for which we have a question on social media.
We're asking you on Twitter whether you regularly wear Malaysian national costumes. And you can also, if you prefer, you can tell us what your preferred choice of national costume is. At the moment, 26% of you say yes, you regularly wear Malaysian national costumes. 34% of you say no, you don't wear them. But 40% of you say only on special occasions. More or less, fairly evenly divided, I'd say. You can take the poll. It's going to be running for at least the next half an hour or so. Please tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 01878988899. You can call us at 03-7733-2900 if you want to tell us about your preferred costume of choice.
So why all this talk about national costumes? Mm-hmm. Well, we had a bit of a costume kerfuffle yesterday when for a few hours it seemed like Malaysia had won the national costume portion of the 2019 Miss Universe pageant. Of course, there was much jubilation all around amongst Malaysians for both Miss Malaysia, who is Shweta Sekon, as well as Carvin Ong's Peranakan-inspired design, until 4 hours after the pageant ended, when the pageant organisers put out a tweet saying it was Miss Philippines who was the rightful winner.
So I got to say, it's still a little bit confusing, yeah. Right? So during the live telecast, it looked like Miss Malaysia had won Best National Costume. Mm-hmm. Even the official Miss Universe Twitter account posted a now-deleted tweet announcing that Malaysia had won. During the show, a photo of Miss Philippines was shown on the large screen. And the host, Steve Harvey, you know there's going to be trouble with Steve Harvey, right? He announced her as the winner. But then he turned to introduce the winner and the person standing next to him. So the screen cuts to him and he's got Miss Malaysia. But I think he said Philippines. Mm-hmm. To which Shweta corrected him and said, it's Malaysia, not Philippines. Now, Harvey thought that there had been a mix-up. He insisted that he was just reading what was on the teleprompter.
Poor Harvey.
And then he said that Malaysia is the real winner. So Shweta was given time to explain her costume. But then 4 hours after the show ended, the organizers clarified that Miss Philippines was the actual winner. Mm. Very, very confusing.
It is. I remember that whole excitement that we had won the best national costume, and then to find out later that, oh no, it's been a mix-up all over again. So Shweta Sekon also explained later on social media that 4 countries had actually been briefed to be on standby for the national costume winner. Mm. And that the crew had been telling her to put on her costume because she was going to be the winner.
Yeah.
So needless to say, this mix-up has caused a massive amount of unhappiness, both among Malaysian and Filipino netizens, who have been questioning how both the mix-up could have happened, and also why it actually took so long for the organizers to clarify.
Right.
It was 4 hours later.
So mix-up aside, clearly people feel very strongly about this national costume segment. So while it's really a bit of a letdown that Malaysia didn't actually score what would have been its first win in this category, we thought we'd talk about this idea of a national costume and what it means for an outfit to represent a country.
And perhaps the best place to start that discussion is with this year's almost first place design, created by Malaysian couturier Carvin Ong. It's named a Peranakan Indulgence. And if you've seen a picture of this confection, it's actually inspired by the heritage of the Peranakan community and its bridal traditions. The outfit is made up of a bodice of woven Malay brocade songket, wings made out of Nyonya kebaya fabric, and what looks like an elaborate dessert table, 2 dessert tables actually, on either side of her, that feature an array of Peranakan treats like onde-onde, kuih kochi, angku, kuih lapis, and kuih talam. And then there's also the traditional basket, the bakulsia.
I gotta say, any costume that features a dessert table is a win for me.
100%. When I first saw the outfit, I thought it could be a smart way for her to hide some real kuehs among there, like grab a snack if she got hungry.
Yeah, I mean, she's standing there for quite a while.
Yes, exactly.
I've got to say, I'm a sucker for fabric. Mm-hmm. And so the textures of the fabric used on this costume were absolutely gorgeous. From the textured brocade to the gossamer-like batik, it was really really beautiful. Oh, didn't really care too much for the dessert tables. Then again, I don't have a sweet tooth.
So. I don't know. I think what I liked was the sort of how unified the idea of the Peranakan culture was in the outfit. I loved the idea of the table. I mean, at the end of the day, these costumes are not wearable.
Right.
I mean, they're meant to be sort of larger than life, over the top kind of costumes. And even the detailing on the table, they were all like old Peranakan style, you know, lacquer work. And it was beautiful. I thought it was a really beautiful design. Mm-hmm. The dress really continues this recent trend of going, you know, really avant-garde and over the top with the concept of a national costume when it comes to the Miss Universe pageant. Not necessarily depicting a particular costume, but rather a particular cultural aspect or a cultural moment, or even, you know, a subculture of Malaysia.
Yeah, and I think it's also become quite a bit of an online national pastime here in Malaysia. Especially in over the past few years, I've seen this. You know, people discussing, dissecting Miss Malaysia Universe's the national costume design, especially. And this usually an unveiling at first. The pictures hit the social media, and then you'll have either the haters or the lovers, or in some cases, you'll have both.
Yeah, or the ones who say, "Well, I could have done better."
Correct.
So I feel like a lot of this excitement, as far as I can remember anyway, can be traced back to that Twin Towers jumpsuit in 2016, right? Which really caused this flurry of both appreciation and like virulent criticism. But there've certainly been others that have caught Malaysians' attention as well. And so just as a reminder, I thought we could run through our Miss Universe national costume designs for the last 4 years, fifth year being this year, of course.
Ooh, a bit of a mini Hari Nidalamstra.
Yes. So in 2015, we had a design by Jovian Mandagi. Okay. And the costume was a two-piece purple songket outfit, which was embellished with golden leaves, with hibiscus. And it was inspired by the bunga mas, the sort of golden flower offering that people exchange. And the costume also featured this like intricate golden headpiece by Bremen Wong, which was inspired by a peacock.
Mm. And of course, the next year was 2016, which was our Twin Towers costume. So this was the futuristic silver jumpsuit inspired by, of course, the Petronas Twin Towers. It was designed by Rizman Rizaini. The costume literally features the towers on each shoulder, and it was embellished with a lot of Swarovski diamonds, if I remember.
Yeah. Very futuristic looking.
Yeah, and the whole
it?
Suit, I think, mimicked the designs of the lines on the tower.
Right.
I know that a lot of people didn't like this design. Mm. I wasn't a huge fan. I didn't hate it.
No.
I didn't love it either, but I thought it was bold.
Mm. And also, if you're going to be talking about the, you know, what represents Malaysia, perhaps it was a little bit of a literal representation.
Yeah, I thought it was too literal. Yeah. And then in 2017, there was another much talked about costume. It was the Nasi Lemak dress.
Talk about literal. I know you like this one, Suhaib.
Yes, Well, this dress was designed by Brian Koo, and the dress itself was white to represent rice, and then it had detailings of ikan bilis, it had peanuts, it had your cucumber slices, it had your sunny side up egg, and it even had hand-embroidered rhinestones for sambal. And of course, you had two giant banana leaf wings to go with it.
The sambal looked like, you know, exactly like if you had spilt a bowl of sambal on yourself. As you're carrying it.
I wasn't a fan. For me, it was the literal egg on the dress and the ikan bilis that did it. That for me, it felt like sort of moved away from being sort of a touch of a nasi lemak dress to a literal wrapped a person in rice and eggs and sambal, which I didn't fancy.
Because you're right, the idea of it is there. I mean, if you talk about rice being an integral part of Malaysian culture or part of our national identity, you know, many major cultures, all of us eat rice. And so the idea of having a dress made out of hand-embroidered grains of rice sounds like a good start. But yeah, they lost me at the ikan bilis corsetty thing.
I really liked it. If I took this one as a literal representation and the year before as another literal representation of Petronas Twin Towers, I thought this was much more elegantly done than the other one.
Okay.
And I guess maybe you could see it as a way of putting our voice out there that, look, nasi lemak is our dish.
Oh, okay. Yes. Before someone else claims it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So do you remember 2018? It's last year. So one, the warrior princess inspired outfit. The costume was called the Bangap Rahu, inspired by the wood carving seen on traditional fishing boats in the east coast of Malaysia, and was designed by Saleh Hamid with boots designed by Ria Tan.
I kind of feel like this also came on the wake of Wonder Woman because it looked very Wonder Woman-esque.
A lot, yes. Yeah. I don't particularly remember this outfit. Even when I looked up the photos before earlier this morning, I remembered the others, but this one, I think it sort of slipped under the radar a bit.
I think it was not controversial. So people weren't hating on it quite as much.
And I also feel like, did it take inspiration from, was it Miss Thailand the year before in her tuk-tuk costume? Or was that tuk-tuk costume last year, perhaps?
I can't quite remember. The tuk-tuk costume was last year, I think.
So this whole idea of transportation as costumes.
So even just from these examples, right, we can see how diverse the interpretation of a national costume can be. So I wanted to speak to someone who has actually been in this hot seat of creating one of these designs. I spoke earlier today to fashion designer Shomir Iswa Sen Gupta, who created the 2013 national costume for the Miss Universe Malaysia. And I started off by asking him where a designer begins when it comes to representing the country's culture, you know, literally in costume form for a platform like this.
So when it comes to this kind of, not task, but requirement for a designer to design such a big event that involves representation and at the same time celebrating differences, but at the same time we have to face it, they have their own standards of what is in, what is not. Like Miss Universe in the 70s, 60s, you can see every decade the standard of beauty kind of change. So that's one of the few factors that is needed to be accounted in. Another thing is, of course, you're representing Malaysia. So a big significant of it has to do with culture and identity. Culture doesn't have to be traditional stuff. Like Thailand did the tuk-tuk. We can also play with subculture stuff, something that identifies with the country. And it has to be, how, that's the borderline. Do not make it look like a costume. It has to be elevated to like another level. So that's when it comes, all the details, all the small details. It could be from the way the fabric was woven, or like special dye or painting or embellishments like beading and embroidery. Of course, it has to look good and proportionate. And of course, it has to stand out. And then it's very hard for you to find all these balance. It comes with a good, great understanding of what the pageant world is all about, and also through experience of understanding fashion and like fashion history and cultural history. So I think the balance is the most difficult part, is to find the middle part, the balance to tie everything together. So I think it has to come with the experience and knowledge that you've gone through and mistakes that you've done before to come up with such an amazing design, especially for something that is as big as Miss Universe. And then you need to know proportion. Like, you can't costume on a real person on a red carpet is different from a costume that is on that kind of very, very big stage, and you need to know your competitors. All this, and you need to study like all these years which kind of costumes that make into the top 5 or top 10. So you need to play around with that also. So like, you also need to win the standard of what is acceptable. At the same time, you are also selling your part as designer, selling the story of the country and the culture that you're representing. So I think the most difficult part is to find the balance.
So it's interesting, right, this idea of representing a country's identity or a country's culture. How do you adequately represent a country's identity in a costume?
It could be something that is, let's say the country has a very, we used to have like Brussels flowers, and then it used to be like that, like a certain tribe, flowers, and normally it's like flowers or tribe or the national fabric produced by respective countries. But lately now, they are trying to put things that is more relevant to the society, like things like subculture, like I said earlier, like the tuk-tuk. Mm-hmm. And then like now, Malaysia did Peranakan Kuih, the Kuih-Kuih. Mm-hmm. So I think throughout so many years, they need to elevate and not make it like the same thing again and again, also because you want to make it interesting. Like, how do you make this, like, I don't know how, 30 over years, 40 over years, pageant to be interesting every each time when the national costume is presented on the stage. So it could also be something from a famous song. That, but of course, when you choose something like this, the song has to be like really, really well known, like the Japanese Sakura song, you know, like mm-hmm. something that is like not short sendiri, like you buat, but no one, you have to explain so much. Because I think a great costume is when you don't need to explain so much. Like, we did kind of interesting choices this past few years. The thing that we presented to Miss Universe wasn't the traditional element. Like, we've seen, like, this past few years, we've been kind of adventurous with the LCC, which is not traditional, but it's also, but people identify because it was one of the tallest buildings in the world. So when you choose something like that, the scale of it has to be big, the impact of it has to be there when you're choosing something that is not traditional. Because when you choose something traditional, people can't question that much because, it's part of our culture. So when you choose something that is part of the modern world or something that is happening right now in society, the impact has to be there. It has to be a phenomenon or like, the impact has to be there for you to choose that, so people will just, I get it. Mm. So, yeah, we used to do like animals and fusion tribes. So I think there's a few of these things can be part of representing the country's culture, not traditionally. There's nothing wrong with being traditional, but you need to elevate it with the standard of the international stage lah.
You know, people are very invested and interested in this idea of a national costume, right? And one that is supposed to represent us. Mm. Can it also then end up making people feel excluded or like they are not being represented enough?
But it's politics, babe. Everything is involved politics. So I think it has to be something that is, because the country don't only send for 1 year, right? It's like consistently, like many, many years. So I think it's the job of the organization that sends the girls to represent our country to actually find things that has not been up there yet. Like, maybe this year you choose Peranakan, next year, why not we do Orang Asli? And then, like, even Orang Asli, there's so many groups of Orang Asli in Semenanjung. It has to be fair, lah. You cannot, like, just choose just one side of the society to represent the country all the time. Mm. Because, especially like us, we are known as a melting pot. We are known for our celebration of respecting our differences in cultures with our neighbors and our friends. The organization has to play an important part because it's also educating people, educating the pageant fans, educating the world what a certain country is all about. So I think organization has to be fair and they need to know what role are they playing and what are they trying to bring up there.
So that was Shomer Iswa Sengupta, who is a fashion designer. And he also designed the national costume for Miss Malaysia Universe in 2013.
Mm-hmm. So we asked you on Twitter, do you regularly wear Malaysian national costumes? The poll results as it stands are 27% of you say, yes, you do. 33% of you say, no, you don't. 40% of you, the largest group, say only on special occasions. And we had a couple of comments come in via Twitter as well as WhatsApp. So majority of the comments on Twitter seem to focus on this question of which is our national costume. Mm-hmm. Charles Brick says that, or asks that. Sankanchil Guru asks that. Jonathan Tan also asks the same question. What costume is a national costume? Flight in by Stephen Mark asks, does a sarong count? And I would say unequivocally, yes, it does count.
If by the mere fact that almost everyone wears one at some point.
Yes. And this is a really interesting question. I think we should go back to answer it based on our own experiences. Mm. But let me just share with you what Maggie says via WhatsApp. Maggie says that she saw the outfit, the Miss Universe outfit, and she's pretty sure that she won't wear that Malaysian costume. Mm-hmm. But she has a suggestion. So whoever the designer is for next year's Malaysian...
If you're listening,
here's Maggie's idea. She says that a Malaysian costume would look like a salwar kameez, which is a stylized Punjabi suit, but with a Chinese collar, a klepet down the front for kerongsang to be worn with it, and finished off with a sari material scarf around the shoulders. And perhaps the fabric itself could be Pua Kumbu to include East Malaysia.
Oh, well, that's a lovely idea, isn't it? I would wear that.
<There you go. laughs> So this question of... what is a national costume? I find it quite odd because, you know, as Malaysians, we're quite happy to, I don't know, use chopsticks and eat rice with our hands or have vadas and, you know, cross culture when it comes to food. But then why do we struggle when it comes to the concept of national costumes? We don't have a national costume, I feel. I feel that we have many national costumes to reflect our multicultural identity.
Maybe that's the problem, isn't it? That we're still struggling to hone in on what a Malaysian identity is in many ways. Mm-hmm. And so when we haven't yet decided, because our brand of multiculturalism is still quite disparate. Mm. We live alongside each other. We don't necessarily always, everywhere, live together with each other. And so that's why it's a little bit difficult to define what you mean when you say what represents all of us.
Mm.
Or can we say everything represents all of us? Not yet, anyway.
Looking back at all the different national costumes for Miss Universe, right? I like this idea of having, like, for example, each year we've had a different part of Malaysian culture being represented there. And it goes to show that all of these makes up our Malaysian culture. Mm-hmm. We're not narrowed down to just one particular costume and we have to make different variations of that. But each year we can highlight something different. And like this year, for example, it's the Peranakan culture and we've highlighted different parts of it as well. And I think it's accepting that we have different parts of ourselves instead of having to always find that one particular point that we can all agree on.
I think that sounds, you know, like an ideal way. And I hope for a time when that's how we think of these things, right?
Mm. So I wear a sari every day. Very often I wear batik blouses, sari blouses with my saris. And I feel that it is a way that I express my individuality. It's a tiny slice of Malaysia in what is a costume that perhaps, or a traditional outfit that's rooted in another culture. That is not entirely alien from me. And we are this, right? This is the intersectional part of us, that we are Indian and that we are women and that we are feminist and that I am so many parts that make up the whole.
And I think these sense of identity also shifts depending on where you are.
Yes.
So for me, a big part of, so weirdly enough, when I think about when I'm in Malaysia, and if someone tells me this event is themed traditional outfits or national costume, I would just as easily think I'd wear a sari as I would to wear baju kurung or kebaya. But somehow when I'm representing Malaysia at international events, you know, at conferences or whatever, and when they say wear a national costume for a particular event, I always tend to want to wear a kebaya or a baju kurung because I feel very strongly that I'm already looked at. People already know fairly little about Malaysia. And then they see me and they tend to think that I'm from one of the South Asian countries or that I'm from India, whatever. I don't want that. I want to be Malaysian and I want to be distinctly Malaysian. And the easiest way for me to do that is to wear something that I can say, well, this is Malaysian. Because if I wear a sari, people always think I'm from the Indian contingent, and true, I don't want to be from the Indian contingent.
Well, I'm sure in the next international gathering that you go to, you could just hand out, you know, Peranak and Kwe, and everybody would recognize you straight away.
So you might like this idea. So what I did with my last kabaya that I got done for a conference in particular, mm-hmm. I made the top out of a sari.
Yes.
So I kind of felt a little bit like both sides of my identity were being represented.
And that's exactly it, right? Mm-hmm. That we can straddle many, many different identities and still be uniquely Malaysian. I've said this over and over again. I wear a sari not as cultural representation, but of a deeper identity. The ability for me to wear what I want, where I want, when I choose to makes me who I am, mm-hmm. and that's stronger to me than a national identity.
What do you wear national costumes, Suan? Traditional costumes, however you want to.
Yeah, I guess it's. I think I understand what you mean, Sharmila. When you are abroad, it's easier to wear that baju kurung because that is you. It's easily identifiable to say that this is Malaysian in a way. Mm. Whereas if I wear the cheong sam, automatically I will be assumed to be from China or in that part. And I want to be recognized as Malaysian. And already, like you said, I do. There's a lot of times when I tell people where Malaysia is and they don't know where it is. And then I have to say, well, we're next to Singapore.
Yes, and nobody likes that. Well, if you have any more thoughts on this idea of what a national costume is, if you've been following the Miss Universe pageant and you have thoughts on our Miss Universe Malaysia costume, do you think it should have won? I do. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also look us up on Facebook if you'd like to drop us a message. We are BFM The Bigger Picture. If you've missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app or on Spotify. We do have to run off now, but meanwhile, I'll leave you with PJ Harvey singing Dress on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.